Good morning. Welcome to WCA B324. This session is integrating the new Microsoft Application Virtualization 5.0 with other virtualization solutions. So again, we want to thank you all for being here. How many people thought twice about going to Mark Rusinovich's session going on right now? We know you guys are the diehard AppV gurus, so thanks for being here. And we really want to say, you know, we're hoping you're enjoying Tech Ready. How many people are enjoying Tech Ready? Having a good time? How many people come here for the Tech Ed? I always do that. You'll get the joke in a second. But how many people is this? How many people have come to the first time as this being their Tech Ed, the very first time? So we had about half people here. Really cool. So again, thanks for being here today. My name is Alfred Ojukwu. And this is...
I'm Steve Thomas.
And I'm Henry Shulman, and welcome.
So, before we get started, I want everybody to stand up. Stand up. Stand up. There we go. Stand up. And we want you to really stretch. It's Friday. Everybody's had a good week. You had a... Hopefully everybody made it to at least one party. Go ahead and stretch. Come on, stretch. Stretch. Move around a little bit. We're trying to keep you awake this time. I know it's the last few sessions, and hopefully if we see you, your eyes closing, we're going to start pointing at you. If you have to yawn, get it out. Good, good. And there's a couple people more needing a little bit more stretch. Go ahead. Awesome. All right, so get ready for AppV. But before we get started, we have some surveys for AppV that are coming from MDOP. We have someone coming around. If you have a moment, if you could just, if you're interested in filling out the survey.
Go ahead and raise your hand.
Raise your hand.
It covers MDOP, so all the products. They want to have a review from the customers.
Feature requests.
We're looking for feedback from you all.
So please raise your hand. This one over here. On the left side over here. Far left.
Your feedback is going to be very helpful as we're moving forward. A lot of new products are coming out. We're upgrading them to the latest bits, and we're taking your feedback very seriously. So if you have a second, please fill that out and get it back to us before you leave. So we're going to go on with the session, and I'll turn it over to my colleague, Steve.
I'd like to start first with a quote. Reject the tyranny of the or and embrace the genius of the and. The purpose of this presentation is to talk not only about AppV5, but how AppV5 integrates with other virtualization solutions. And when I speak of other virtualization solutions, we're actually talking about all up and down the virtualization stack, and not just a Microsoft stack. We also discuss leveraging our awesome worldwide partner community in order to find you the best solution ever. And we want to discuss how AppV fits into those, either those hybrid virtualization stacks or if you want a pure Microsoft virtualization stack, the bottom line is a solution that allows for rapid application delivery, rapid application provisioning, and of course, flexibility in allowing a consistent application experience across multiple devices. So what we're gonna do, real quick, we have an assumption here. We have an assumption that you already have an idea of what AppV and AppV5, our most recent release. In fact, as you may know, we now have a beta release of SP2 made available as of yesterday.
How many are already working with 4X?
Yeah, how many people have it in their departments?
Anyone start playing with 5? Okay, it's a good amount.
And it's going to be chock full of demonstrations tonight, working not only with AppV, but AppV and leveraging Citrix solutions, AppV and leveraging other Microsoft virtualization solutions. You see how they go hand in hand. And we're going to emphasize why AppV matters, why AppV is your flexible application engine. We're also going to discuss virtualization optimization features and all the additional treats that we have added in the latest release of AppV5 that allow for this type of automated solution.
All right, so that's the main objectives, and this is what we're going to cover. We're going to address API 5.0, working with Citrix. How many people have Citrix environments along with their AppV? Okay, that's a significant population there. Okay, working with System Center. Is everyone applying Config Manager delivery methods? Yeah, all right. Desktop virtualization, UEV, storage virtualization, service virtualization, and then we'll have some time for questions.
So let's go back to that really quick. Our goal really is to make sure you get a semi-deep understanding of how these solutions fit into the overall story that AppV has out in the industry, and to make sure that you can take back some of those ideas and use it within your organization, or even, you know, come up with ways to enhance the product itself. So, moving forward, AppV over the years. I know many of you guys have probably been with AppV for a while and remember back in 2006 when it had the 3.x version available. And Microsoft initially saw that as an opportunity to take part in the virtualization solution that was being offered.
Did anybody go back when it was Softricity? Because Europe was a big implementer back then. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I noticed that the Europe continent had a lot of folks that were doing AppV, and over some time it's been adopted throughout. And with that, as Microsoft acquired SoftGrid, as it was called then, there became a lot more work that had to be done to integrate it into the overall desktop stack and the Microsoft Desktop Optimization pack. And into 2007, as it kind of evolved and became something that became a first-class application, you start seeing where it becomes much more integrated into some of our delivery solutions, like Configuration Manager. How many people have used it with AppV, with Configuration Manager, it was developed? Wow, interesting. I got one person right there. So 2007, we see the first integration of AppV with Configuration Manager, and just the idea that you can now just extend it. You don't have to have a standalone infrastructure. You have some way of delivering it down to the end system. And over that, we improved it, allowing it to work on Windows 7, Windows 7 64-bit, and over the years, with MDOP, it became part of that pack that really made desktop virtualization a real story. We moved into 2010 when Windows 7 came out, and 2011 as we developed it for the other for newer operating systems and newer delivery systems like 2012. Now we start seeing where AppV 4.6 became part of that solution, and AppV 5.0 as the delivery options were made much more viable. And now moving forward, you start seeing AppV 5.0 and lately Service Pack 2, and you start seeing where it starts integrating with Citrix. Again, Citrix integration happened much earlier in the desktop stack. We'll talk about that a little bit earlier, a little bit later when Steve goes into the conversation of what's happened there. But most importantly, the integration is real. The integration is happening as we speak, and we hope to see that continue moving forward with your corporation, with the utilization of the tools that we have available.
Okay, so we'll get started with AppV 5.0. And from the response so far, most of you are already either implementing 4X and 5, or anyone totally brand new to AppV? Oh, we have a few. Okay, great. So this is introduction to AppV. So what does it actually do for you? So most of you are aware of how it works, but for those that are not aware, we're taking the actual application and decoupling it from the operating system. And the benefits for the lifecycle management, for minimizing help desk issues, and the recovery process of an application on multiple platforms with a single version of an application. So how does this work? Okay, so instead of installing it to the actual C program files and the local registry, et cetera, we bring this to a sequencer where it has a base installation of your desktop image. We turn on the sequencer and monitor the installation of the software. That's collecting all the actual resources that are needed for that package to be run on the endpoint. So then we deliver it through various means, which we'll be seeing along the way. And that particular endpoint is a clean operating system, and we can actually do an unload, and it's as if the application was never installed. So there are a lot of benefits to this particular delivery of an application, and primarily the main one is the isolation of the application. So how many of you are implementing terminal services, Citrix, et cetera? So most of you know and are aware of the benefits of isolating the applications and minimizing the conflicts amongst applications. So what are we getting out of this, right? So productivity benefits. We've got the ability to recover a little quicker as well. I always used to think of it as the Palm Pilot solution to applications. Everybody remember Palm Pilots, right? So it broke or you lost it, you just got another one, you just threw it in the sink, and you got your recovered applications back. So that's my concept of how we went to AppV on a desktop to do the same thing. And accelerated deployment. So again, various solutions for different endpoints, and anything from a Windows-only environment to any device, anywhere, through the association of Citrix incorporation as a delivery mechanism as well. All right, so in terms of what we're specifically addressing with AppV, right, so we're now with AppV 5.0, so the actual file system of the application changed, so no more SFT tray. We're talking about the actual virtual file system has changed, so we don't have to have a Q drive anymore. We're looking at the user versus global publication of the applications, so we can actually specify specific users that will be addressed with the application and will not be available to the other users on that particular endpoint, or make it available to all of those on that particular endpoint. Connection groups. Anyone been playing with connection groups? No one?
I see one person right there.
Okay.
Raise your hand.
Great. So
You
are in for a major treat with connection groups. Have any of you done dynamic suite composition? Right? So the ability to have virtual applications interact with each other. So with AppV, we're isolating the application, and through dynamic suiting composition, we used to modify each of the OSD files to be able to be aware of another application that was also virtualized. So most of you are aware that the isolated application, it's in a bubble, but the bubble can speak to the local resources. So through DSC, we were able to have two bubbles be able to communicate to each other. The problem with that is there was a lot of management involved in managing the and modifying the OSD files to be aware of the other application. Through connection groups, we now take that from the file level to a centralized control point, which is the connection group, and simply create a group, list the applications, and now they're aware of each other. So it simplifies the management process and minimizes the effort to do that. Increased manageability. In terms of flexible deployment, we're talking about being able to deliver through the actual AppV server, through Config Manager, through Citrix, or if you want to do local MSI installs, that's an option as well. Hand it off to Alfred.
So, where we go now is the idea that AppV is extending itself out to the Citrix environment. Citrix is, how many people, I know you guys mentioned this already, but I just want to see again the hand, number of Citrix, folks that have Citrix in their environment. Now, Citrix, that's awesome. Citrix has been a partner of Microsoft for a number of years. It, literally in the same, you know, working together side by side, making sure they can deliver an application and deliver desktops to end users, regardless of the type of device that you have available. So where we see the synergy happening is with AppV and Citrix. We start seeing the fact that you can now utilize that as a way to, you know, deliver that application to the end user. With the introduction of what was formerly known as Excalibur, we now have ZenApp 7, which is sort of an integration of Zen Desktop and ZenApp, which basically gives you the ability to have one console to deliver applications and desktops to the end user. One of the main tools that is utilized to deliver that application is AppV. Now, this is important because it really starts to show how lightweight it is for you to utilize that feet in any scenario, not just on your physical desktops, not just on your remote devices or your mobile devices, but to any endpoint that's available to you. So we have we've basically introduced a way to do this in a good way and to make sure that both organizations are working together to deliver to you the best solution possible. So what are some of the delivery methods? We start thinking about integration. We can publish the AppFi to the AppFi management server if you own one. You can also publish it directly to the ZenApp server if you within that environment if you have that available as well. But within ZenApp, you can actually utilize the Citrix receiver to actually pull it down to the end system. Or lastly, you can have the AppFi package utilized to deliver to the end user using the Citrix receiver as well. So those are some ways you can actually deliver it. Normally, what you have to do is, once you have that ZenApp client, you have to go the ZenApp infrastructure and studio itself. You have to go in and configure your applications so that it can be published through the AppFi, the ZenApp infrastructure, as well as your AppFi applications also. So, as I mentioned earlier, AppFi is now the preferred streaming engine. And again, you're going to utilize the Citrix Studio to actually do that work. And we'll take a look at that in just a second. And 4.x still requires manual publishing. And, Steve can tell a little bit about that.
We got a slide on that.
Say again?
We got a slide on that.
Yeah, so we have a slide on that a little bit later. That we'll go into, and we'll talk about some of that. So let's jump into this. We're going to take a look at some of the configurations that are required to make this possible. So I'm going to show you two processes here. So I'm going to remote to my system. See if I can get to it here. Doo-doo-doo. There it is. And in here is where I would actually go in and configure my settings to allow me to publish AppFi applications to the ZenApp server. So let's just go through here. And I'll pull up my Citrix Studio environment. And I'll show you really quickly where those settings are. Let's see if I can see my whole screen much better. And normally on a larger system that has that capacity, you'll be able to kind of see this happen fairly quickly. I know many of you probably have those systems that are available. But if you take a look here, I've created delivery groups. I've created a number of ways to actually see the applications. And I've specified my MCS servers so that they can actually have applications that are published. So these are directly published as part of the AppFi, part of the applications that are delivered to the end user. If I wanted to add more applications, I could. All I'd have to do is go through the process of creating an application. I'll walk you through that really quick. So this is the new, for those of you that haven't seen this yet, this is the new ZenApp infrastructure that will be used to deliver applications to the end users. And just to add on top of that, there's another session that covers completely just ZenApp and Citrix as a whole. I have my colleague Tony up here in front, he'll be doing a session as well. And he'll go into a lot more detail about this. But just so you guys are aware, this is what will happen with your applications. You have the ability to add the applications manually. And this is where the AppFi publishing server comes into play, because now you can specify where your applications are in your infrastructure, if you have a centralized location, and ensure that those applications can be imported into your AppFi, your Citrix Studio as needed.
Tony's session is at 2:45.
Okay. So there again, it makes it simple enough to be able to do this in a much more streamlined way, and the results of that would end up being applications that are published through an AppFi management server, or even a Citrix ZenApp connector, which we'll be able to see later on this evening. Once all of that is configured and you have your applications available, what you should end up seeing at the end would be once you log on to the server, if we were to go onto the server, you'd see a list of applications that were configured to either to be available through the Citrix console. I can then select the applications that I want, that I need access to. You can see all these applications are already published. And once I have access, I pull them down just like I do a normal application. Now, the really cool part is that it isn't just for a regular desktop. So you can send it to a mobile device. You can send it to any other device that has the ability to have the ICA client, a non-Windows device as well. So this is where the value of having that AppFi application available through a Citrix console becomes much more added and much more important in your overall AppFi planning solution.
So this is truly any app on any device, anywhere. So we're talking about creating one package, having it delivered to multiple platforms, and having it available from multiple devices.
We feel this is probably one of the most important things that you guys should be considering because of the fact that we all have a Citrix environment, and that's going to help you sort of figure out how to extend your solutions to other clients and not just the platforms that you work on. Many people are coming in with bring your own devices, so this becomes an actual necessity within the infrastructure that helps you manage those applications.
And manage the devices, so you can control which applications are going to that bring your own device.
In addition to that, you have the ability to roam those settings from one system to another when you combine it with other application settings. So my account isn't available yet, but here you have access. It's running on the system itself, and it's being pulled from the Citrix environment. So I'll pull up another one. I wanted to give you a mini demo of this. Again, you'll see a lot more of it in the session this afternoon. We have two other sections to cover this evening, so we wanted to make sure you understood where those pieces fit and how you can actually go about putting that together when you're actually delivering those applications. So, to sum it up for AppFi, as we move on to the next section, AppFi Citrix, you start seeing that you have the ability to have shared content stores, where you can use it for a persistent or non-persistent cache, and this from non-persistent desktops. This again is relevant to the use of 4.6 applications or even 5.0. And then you have the integration with Citrix XenApp 6.5 on Configuration Manager 2012, as well as XenApp 7 as well. Did you want something? You want to add something on that, Steve, really quick?
Excellent. So I've been working with a lot of customers prior to the release of the latest implementation of XenApp who were still on XenApp 6.5, 2008 R2, wanting to maintain for the time being the Windows 7 desktop experience and application experience, but they wanted to take advantage of AppFi 5.0. Now, with AppFi 4.6 and XenApp 6.5, there was the benefit of the AppFi conduit. I don't know if any of you were ever familiar with the AppFi conduit.
Anyone use the conduit?
So a big
Not
question.
One? Wow.
A big question has come up a lot, especially in my customer engagements, is how do we implement at V5 with XenApp 6.5. Integration can still be accomplished, but is there actually a release conduit? And my answer to that is you can easily make your own. You can republish easily, taking advantage of many of the OS integration features of at V5.0. You can create a conduit using built-in PowerShell. At V5 has something also called App Paths, where, like native applications now, the virtual application registers in the registry in the App Paths key. And what that does is that allows you to actually easily call an application without having to actually call the path of the application. Because if you've noticed with At V5, the default shortcuts, it's a really long path, and you can run into character limitation when working with XenApp 6.5.
Actually, two GUIDs.
Yeah, you've got two really long GUIDs that are actually included in the path. So with just a few lines of code, you can, in whatever language you prefer, you can leverage the common API shell execute and just call the application directly and publish that out. And then that has basically served as your actual conduit into the world of AppV. Other things to be aware of will also be problems with the fact that we have made significant changes with how we manage our default user state for those virtual applications. We no longer state separate into PKG files in AppV5. We actually lay them down in the native file system format. We had a feature deprecation that was released in 5.0 that did not allow our VFSR. Our VFSR is our user mode VFS model, which is responsible for also redirecting user state, not to go to network folders. So what do you think this could have cost? Well, what does everybody do in a Citrix environment often? They redirect app data. They use folder redirection. So we heard you. We heard you. We heard your feedback. And if you would like to play with our newly brought back feature of supported network redirected shell folders, including app data, you can test this with 5.0 SP2 beta, which was made available yesterday, and you can register and download it on our connect.microsoft.com website.
Take it away, Alpha.
All right. So we're going to move forward with the configuration manager and AppV discussion. So we talked about Citrix. We talked about how it's integrating with AppV. Another component that integrates well with AppV is configuration manager. The idea that you can now deliver applications through an electronic software deployment solution. Again, this isn't anything new for many of you that have been using AppV. This is something that's been enhanced over the years. And with 2012 and the release of 2012 SP1, you now have the integration with AppV 5.0 and future and newer applications. You can deliver both 4.6 and 5.0 in Configuration Manager 2012. This kind of walks you through the process, the fact that you have to sequence your applications. You need to make sure that you have a sequencer, make sure you have one for 3264, and then ensuring that you have that application available on a centralized server. We talk about this quite a bit because it's important to make sure that those applications are available for both the Configuration Manager admin and the AppV admin who also needs access to those applications. In addition to that, you'll utilize your distribution points to deliver those applications. So now the beauty of it is it's not just going to you're not just using it for AppV. You now can share that load with not just AppV applications, but MSIs, Windows, physical applications that need to be installed in the system, even Windows Store apps that need to be delivered through AppV, through Configuration Manager. So with Configuration Manager, there's a proliferation of ways to deliver an application, AppV being one of the first-class ways of delivering that to the end system.
So not only are you able to deliver an app to any device, you can also have variations of the app that are following the actual deployment types. So is this the user's mobile device? Is this the user's desktop? Is this the user's laptop, et cetera?
And I think over the years, you'll start to see that we are going to integrate whatever we can into Configuration Manager. And that doesn't mean that if you have an AppV management infrastructure that you shouldn't use it. If you have an AppV management infrastructure, utilize that as well. But also remember that having one is just as helpful as the other, depending on how you configure it. For those of you that do have Configuration Manager, that is the priority that I think should be available. And if you don't, then the AppV management server should also work as well. So we've seen some of the changes with Configuration Manager 2012 and how that's helped with AppV, the fact that the applications are delivered much quicker to the end user. We also noticed that there's a much more utilization of environment, the dynamic, the concept we knew as dynamic suiting.
the ability to have connection groups work for applications, and just the ability to have the instant icon gratification. The minute you unlock your machine, those applications are now available for you because you can configure AppV to actually pull the application down right away and have it on the local system for whoever needs to use it. You also have the ability to integrate it with RDS. Now, we didn't talk too much about RDS, but that's another solution that you can use for virtualization and delivery of both remote apps and AppV applications as well. You can stream. There's a lot of improvements with the streaming that's also been built into Configuration Manager, and the fact that you can have both 4.6 and 5.0 available through the Configuration Manager infrastructure. In addition to that, we talk about just the improvements with Service Pack 1. Now, many of you probably know with R2, not much has changed. You know, you still have the use of AppV 5.0. You still have the use of AppV 4.6. One of the big things, again, that Steve mentioned is with 5.0 Service Pack 2, you'll be able to have support for Windows 8, the beta version that's available. And as it moves closer to GA, you'll be able to utilize it. The last thing that you'll be able to see with the Configuration Manager integration is the ability to pull down AppV applications through our application web catalog. What that basically does is it gives your users the ability to pull the application down from a central location. So again, for those of you that are Configuration Manager admins, this is a simple way for you to manage all of your applications in the same place. Again, this is a simple configuration for your application web catalog, and it simplifies the way you actually manage your infrastructure. For those that you were using Configuration Manager 2007, I know many people went out, wrote some code that was for SharePoint that allowed us to have some level of functionality. But again, this is out of the box. You get those features right away, and the same functionality and feel that you get is what gets pulled down to the end system through the application web catalog. One other piece that gets added in the Configuration Manager, which enhances the ability of how AppV works, is the virtual application connections and the virtual application extensions, which really is a way of having applications be able to talk to each other in a much more fluent way. So, for example, if you have Silverlight and you have an application that needs access to Silverlight, you can suite those applications together and ensure that they have the ability to see each other within that virtualized bubble.
So the connection groups allows the interaction of the virtualized apps, and then the extensions allow with native apps.
Correct.
So and OS integration.
And in one other piece before we move to that next slide is just making sure the virtual environments that are built into Configuration Manager is essentially what we call the virtual application connection groups. So if you are using just the AppV management server or a standalone AppV client itself, you'll have what we call the virtual application connection groups and virtual application extensions. When you move into Configuration Manager, we start calling them virtual environments, which is, again, essentially the same thing. What happens is you get delivered to your desktop the information that relates to the two applications that need to talk to each other. So a simple configuration of that nature gives you the ability to decide what type of relationships each application should have with each other. So, for example, there is no, when you talk about pairing, you can have a number of applications that, for example, plugins. You can have a number of plugins that are required for specific applications like Adobe, and you can package them separately, and then you can actually ACL or permission them based on who needs access to that specific application and put them together in different groups. Now, John might get this a plugin with Adobe, and then Jane might have this plugin with Adobe and still be able to do what they want without having to give them the full suite of applications. The same goes with Office. And by the way, Office 2013 is available through the web as an AppV package if you ever needed to test that as a full suite.
And not to underestimate that particular effort Okay, so the evaluation of the virtual application interactions and the host interaction, this is something you need to have spent some time ahead of time to plan out what that matrix is going to be and what has to be defined for interaction amongst the applications that are virtualized and whatever's on the host. What happens is tend to leave this for the end, and then there's a lot of testing that has to be done, and that could delay your project.
We have a lot of customers creating what I call super bubbles, where they're just connection groups with like 20 apps inside of them, because they still want to deliver them and manage them through AppV, but they still want interaction. That's always a challenge that you've got to manage. AppV isolates. It not only state separates, but it isolates. It truly virtualizes. And by virtualization, we play tricks with the operating system to actually, and we play tricks with the application to mask the presence of applications from each other. Now, we have configuration options that allow us to poke holes and allow for certain types of interaction, but if you want to virtualize your applications but have them interface with each other in literally the same bubble or virtual environment, and when I speak of bubble and virtual environment, synonymous terms, then that's where connection groups are going to come in very handy for you. So what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about desktop virtualization in general and talk to you about how AppV actually fits into this model, because we always have a challenge when we're dealing with VDI solutions or server-hosted virtual desktops. The challenges are always performance, but in the case of this, the context of this discussion, the challenge is getting the user everything they need. Obviously, they need an operating system provided for them. Obviously, they need applications provided for them. Obviously, they've got to have their stuff, their user state. When I talk about user state, that's your goods, that's your stuff. So the concept of user state is change the device, keep your experience. Now, and more now than ever, we are leveraging flexible desktops. And by flexible desktops, we have a desktop that's going to be displaying on a variety of different devices. So you have the user that has their desktop computer. I like to use myself as an example. I have a home office. I have a desktop at my home office. I have a home lab where I have two server-based machines running Hyper-V that I do my testing on. I also have my mobile laptop. I also have my Surface Pro. I also have my Windows phone. The challenge is there are key applications for which I have to have a consistent experience. Otherwise, every time I get a new machine, or every time I log into a machine for the first time, I have to go and open up all the applications, and it takes up way too much time, and it impacts productivity. However, UEV, while it's great at roaming application settings, in order to enhance the UEV experience, you need to couple it. And coupling it with folder redirection is a great way to go. Roaming profiles are challenging. They're bloaty. They increase log-on time. They increase log-off time. And if you're like me, where my desktop literally has everything in the world, sometimes I keep it in documents folder, but I have bad habits, that would create havoc in the world of roaming profiles.
How many people are familiar with UEV? Good. Okay, and how many people can honestly say that they're using UEV? Awesome. I like you. But we'll get to hear more about that in just a second. There's a reason why I asked that.
User experience virtualization. All right, I got a confession. It's state separation. There's no isolation there. Your stuff is stored in a zip-like format, but when the settings come down, the settings behave as if they're native, or in the case of AppV, they behave perfectly inside the AppV bubble, or even outside the AppV bubble, depending on where the settings are actually located. But the bottom line is consistent experience across multiple desktops, and then taking it even further with partners like Citrix, we can bring this unified experience for applications to Android devices, to iOS devices, to non-Microsoft devices, to where not only do they have their access to their published Windows applications, they have still that consistent experience. Well, what about apps? How do you get that application provisioned to those desktops as optimally, as quickly as possible? Well, that's where AppV comes in. AppV, because we self-contain and place the application that was formerly a whole bunch of files, a whole bunch of registry settings all over the place, we put it in a nice little ball of goo and we just push it out. One PowerShell command to add it, one PowerShell command to publish it. That's what goes on behind the scenes, regardless of how you're delivering it. Are you delivering it streaming? Are you delivering it through Config Manager? Are you delivering it through MSI?
Or one PowerShell command to rule them all. That'll be the segue to Tony's session.
Exactly. So, Not done yet. So we, through a combination of application virtualization, remote app, our partners, we can deliver an application as quickly as possible because rapid provisioning is the key here. And a little bit later, when we talk about storage enhancements, we'll talk about how we can also optimize the consumption of applications in your storage world, or as I call it, your real estate world.
So let me, I want to make something fairly clear here. I know it seems sort of redundant because we're talking about applications, but for many of you guys out there and your users, when you look at the desktop and you look at their work environment, that application is the most important thing to them. As long as they can get their work done, that application is the most crucial thing to what makes them money. I hope many of you guys agree here. So our intent is to talk about how to increase productivity and how to speed up the delivery of applications through a much quicker means. And that's why we're going into details of all these other ways to make sure that data gets to the end user much quicker.
All right, so as far as your platform or, well, let me go back first. Operating system, AppV5, it's a modern app. It requires a modern operating system. Windows 7, it requires Windows 8, and now we're adding support for Windows 8.1. If you are still using XP, you're still stuck with 4.6 SP2. For the time, yeah, pretty much SP2. But the idea is modernize, so we need to modernize. Now, as far as our back-end hypervisor, if you want a pure Microsoft stack, that's fine. If you want a pure Microsoft stack that is Hyper-V, that leverages RDS and uses the RDS connection broker and leverages a remote app for publishing out to these end users, that's fine. We always love that, of course. But understand, again, back to the genius of AND, your partners, our partners. If you want to implement a hybrid stack, AppV does not care. AppV works with the operating system. So if you want to leverage Citrix Xen Desktop, if you even want to leverage that other one up there, it works just fine. So let's talk a little bit about UEV. And the reason I wanted to get to this point a little bit later than earlier is now that we have a good idea of how UEV fits in the model, let's talk specifically about what UEV actually gives us in particular. And this is going to be very important in deciding, do I want to use UEV or do I want to possibly consider a partner solution for that? So it was developed as a replacement for roaming user profiles. By itself, UEV, I cannot tell you at this point that it is a complete replacement of roaming user profiles. I will tell you that if you're like me and you use UEV for your personal and your own computing and you leverage it with folder redirection, it is a complete solution that allows me to completely get off of roaming user profiles. It's designed for a consistent Windows experience where we roam not only just application settings, but we also roam operating system settings. What we do is we give you a base set of templates that you can take advantage of so you can begin to work and see the value right out of the box. But there are hundreds of thousands of applications out there in the ecosystem.
And so what you can do is you can generate your own templates. And if you do, we always encourage uploading them to the community, especially the off-the-shelf applications. If you go to our TechNet gallery, we actually have quite a bit of community-generated content revolving around UEV templates and UEV information. The nice thing about UEV for me is I roam across the Windows 7 experience, the Windows 8 experience, the Windows Server 2008 R2, the Windows Server 2012 experience, all with UEV. I roam from device to device. It allows me to transfer user state across boundaries. That should be Surface Pro, by the way. And it crosses app formats. So if I have Adobe Reader, which is generated through AppV, on the same experience for me on another machine, I actually have a native Adobe Acrobat that's actually been installed directly through MSI. I can roam settings between the native and the virtual. And it does give us that cross-modern OS experience. If I have a Windows 7 background and a Windows 8 background and I want to keep them consistent, I can keep them consistent. Another thing that's great about UEV, the smart synchronization policies. We sync at key events, log on, log off, lock, unlock, connect, disconnect. And it's rapid, and we leverage the kernel through a filter driver to make that happen.
And the emphasis on that is previously with the roaming profiles, everything was loading up at the beginning. So now the big difference here is that UEV is reading and writing locally, and then the synchronization is in the background. So it gives you a lot more efficient experience when you're entering the product.
So the nice thing about UEV is it requires no back-end infrastructure. All you need is a setting storage location, which can be an AD home directory. It can be a standard network share. Then the client, of course, has a UEV agent. Right now, the UEV agent is pretty much limited to user interfacing with PowerShell. There is a new user interface coming in the next release of UEV, which that beta, of course, was also made available on Connect yesterday. UEV integrates with our ESD solution. You can actually deploy virtual applications along with UEV settings with an actual deployment and configuration manager, and it can also be added and configured as part of your base Windows image.
So, and just to add one other piece here, we're talking about UEV, we talked about AppV, and what you start to find is that they're a great complement to each other. One manages your specific settings, and one manages your application settings. So the beauty of that is when you put those two together, you now have a fuller experience from machine to machine. And, again, there's been a strategic decision as to how that works and how to ensure you're getting the best bang for the buck when you're working with both solutions.
So in addition to a standard network share for your actual settings storage, obviously, there's going to need to be a template catalog path. You can choose to have a catalog path locally, or you can actually leverage a shared template catalog path. The nice thing about all of this information is we can actually allow you to use AD to control all of these individual settings because we provide ADMX templates into the distribution of UEV, so you can immediately import these in and take advantage of group policy to roll out your UEV configuration.
And one other piece is you can actually use Configuration Manager. Now, we talked about Configuration Manager for AppV. UEV has the ability to manage those configuration settings in Configuration Manager as well. So you can control those group policies and the offline settings as well in at least monitoring the settings of your UEV through your Configuration Manager environment.
Okay, so I've had to answer this question quite a bit this week. UEV requirements right now, Windows 8 modern app support is coming. It's in the next release of UEV. Again, that's beta, but as of now, our released versions require the operating system Windows 7, Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows 8, and Windows Server 2012. So, benefits of AppV and UEV integration. Great compliment with App V. We do have some concerns with the current release of UEV in the fact that we took advantage of client-side caching or offline files, and a lot of people don't want to implement that in VDI environments. So we're replacing that in this upcoming release of UEV with a smart sync agent that will prevent you from having to turn on client-side caching. And so that will be a definite improvement in the VDI world. Again, smart logon and synchronization. So you can have your instant apps through AtV along with your settings. Let's say that you are logging onto a machine for the first time. It's a brand new machine. Your replaced PC. The publishing server can immediately begin to stream the application bits down. And the settings can also come down with the application that you had saved previously on your settings storage path. Right now, it manages file and registry settings across physical and virtual applications. Those are the two key components. The registry information is stored into a zip file called a PKGX. And then you have PKG DAT files, which represent individual files.
There was an interesting question at the booth the other day about how do you recover when a user's settings are not quite what they want it to be, or they want to go back to the initial. So removing the PKG file and doing a sync in a new environment was the quickest way to do that, to help avoid support calls.
So it's important to mention that we have other user experience virtualization solutions or user state management solutions. AppSense, they have a booth here as well. They have, of course, AEM. AEM is very popular. RES makes their workspace manager, and Amidio makes Flex Profiles. Now, why would you want to use a partner instead of UEV? Well, right now, we don't have rollback. We're working on that. We don't mandate settings. A lot of people are asking, can I use UEV to generate a PKGX file and lock that down for individual users? We don't have that, and we would often recommend a partner solution like the three I mentioned in the previous slide. Reporting, there is, because UEV doesn't have a back-end infrastructure, and there may be those that desire that back-end infrastructure, then a partner solution would be great. And finally, another question we've had is, working with XP and supporting XP and migrating from XP, again, we would actually recommend a partner solution. Now, Alfred wants to show you something.
Again, the important piece here is you have to ask the question, do I need any of these features? If you really sit back and look at your environment, evaluate what you have currently, do you really need to have some level of rollback? Do you need to have mandated settings? That's how you make your decision as to what solutions you go with and how large your organizations are. And again, UEV is literally in beta 2 at this point. So what we urge you to do is pull it down, try it out, make it part of your evaluation solution, make sure you understand what it can and can't do, and compare it against the other solutions that we have provided. So really quick, I wanted to show you the sync settings of the latest UEV version that we have available. Steve mentioned it earlier. This is what replaces the offline folders and allows you to manage it. Now, I don't have a second system, but I want to make sure you get a sort of quick view of what's happening with it, and also walk you through just what you'll be doing when you're actually testing an application or preparing an application to have roaming settings. So I'm going to go ahead and pull up the UEV client that I have running on my system, and I have running the 8.1 preview bits at this point, and I'm going to go down here to my applications, and I have two things here: the company settings center. I don't know if you can see that, and also the Microsoft User Experience agent itself. So in that, when you pull up the generator, what you'll end up seeing is the ability to create what Steve mentioned as the creating the settings location. Settings locations template. I wish I could blow this up a little bit. But the point here is that it gives you the ability to create those templates that manage the setting for that specific file. In addition to my system, what I also have installed at this moment is the Microsoft Math, which is installed as an AppV application. If we go back to the desktop,
I've pinned it to my desktop. The reason why I know it's a virtual application is if I go into the properties of the application and I don't have Zoomit. you'll be able to see that the path, and I'll copy this out and show it to you, is basically pointing to a virtual root. And this is basically what tells you that the application isn't installed physically on the machine, but it's in a virtual location. And if you know where that virtual location is, you can control that application. It's specific to the user, depending how that application's installed. So with the UEV agent, what you can then do is, if you're needing to create a locations template, is to copy that path in and make sure that you have that path specified. And what happens is when you click the option, it will monitor what that application is doing, just like it would when you were doing a sequencing of an application, and capture any settings that are relevant to that application. Now, the beauty of this is it works with the physical applications that's installed in the machine or a virtual application. So now you can roam between a virtual application with the same bitness or a physical application with the same bitness. I can make the changes to it, I can adjust it, I can change the colors. And once I'm done making those changes and I close out of the application, assuming I change the skin, what happens is it then captures on any of those settings and makes it available, because it's looking at any keys that are changed, any registry changes that are made, or any file paths that are made. So it captures it, because those are user settings that are specific to you and you alone, or to your users.
Actually, we're at the booth and we're doing this demonstration, and I'm looking at that and said, wow, I can actually use that as a tool for troubleshooting AppV apps. Because what happens is, once it crashes, you have to turn on Procmon and start looking for things. So that's a way to expose what the package is doing and where the settings are in case you need to look at those or know where they are when you're doing troubleshooting for an application. So just added another tool to my troubleshooting kit.
Yep. So from there, you then have the ability to customize the settings for that application and then save it here. I've done it already. I'm going to open it up for you really quick so you can kind of see what's going on with the application. And again, the beauty here is it captures those settings that you've made and it just continues to add it. You then have that ability to place it in the centralized location or control it through group policies in your organization to ensure that everyone can pull down the same settings for that specific applications if they're opted into the availability of that application. So that's a little snippet of what UEV can do and how it integrates well with the AppV. So again, as Steve mentioned, when the AppV application is pushed down and the UEV settings are pushed down, you capture the settings for the AppV, and as the application moves from one system to another, the settings move as well.
One more point, you don't have to go back through the entire process. You can modify that XML, and there is a validation for the XML file to save some time.
And that's right here again, if you needed to validate it. So again, we urge you to pull it down, check it out, see what it does, make sure you understand how it can benefit you, where it can provide improvements, and any feedback you give us will help us develop it to what you're looking to see.
And as I've said before, not only am I a proponent of UEV, I'm also a customer of UEV. You know, it's like the old Hair Club for Men comment, because I use UEV to roam about 20 applications. And I'm offline and disconnected from my corporate network, but because I have my offline folder path there, I'm able to actually do an offline sync with my local client-side cache. And you can begin to see all of the applications that I'm currently using and currently roaming settings with UEV. And as you can see, the state size is going to vary. For example, Notepad, I only have a few registry settings, so I have just a little tiny PKGX file. But for like Visual Studio, I may have more. I may have files. Internet Explorer, obviously, a lot of your common settings are going to be a majority of registry settings, so you're going to have a much larger PKGX file. It's all going to depend on what you actually roam. The type of data that you're roaming, and the amount.
So it's going, and again, you see my theme settings is there as well, including my desktop background. All this stuff, of course, is obfuscated. We put them in, we zip them up, put them in PKG files and PKG DAT files, and we give them a nice little GUID name, so it's rather anonymized at that point. But one thing I want to point out, for 20 apps and some OS settings, my total consumption on the network is less than 6 megs. Not a lot of overhead when you're roaming settings. All right.
So we've covered Citrix. We've talked about Citrix and its integration points. We've talked about Configuration Manager and its integration points with AppV. We've covered a little bit of UEV and its integration points. Again, all great solutions. We've talked about some of the other solutions that you can use to integrate with AppV. Now, how many people have used storage virtualization? I got one back there. There's always one. Raise your hand up high. There you go. Give that man a hand, seriously.
Well,
awesome.
Now you'll find out why.
Conceptually, you all are kind of using storage virtualization. It's all about abstraction. The cloud. Cloud computing is about abstraction, where the user just cares about the experience. We don't care where the stuff actually lives. When you're playing with your Azure VM in the cloud, you don't know what specific machine or that specific data center. You don't know where that stuff is. It's all abstracted to you. That's the whole principle of cloud computing. Well, in the concept of virtualization of storage, we've come a long way from, I have a computer with files on a physical hard disk. I could be pulling this from a virtual machine. That virtual machine could be hosted on a LUN. This LUN has been carved out and is spanning across several spindles. It's been abstracted. That file could be actually appearing as a local drive, but it's not really a local drive. It's actually being redirected through a protocol like iSCSI or SYFS all the way back to a data center where you've got a NetApp filer or you've got a Fibre Channel SAN. The bottom line is the user doesn't care as long as they know how to get to their stuff and their stuff is readily available. So with this principle in mind, in AppV5, we developed what was called the Shared Content Store. Now, the challenge with VDI is always rapidly provisioning the applications. VDI, streaming the application does not necessarily make sense because you want the machine and you want the application made available as quickly as possible. In 4.6, we introduced the Shared Content Store. But the Shared Content Store was an all-or-nothing type strategy and did not allow us to use flexibility in our data centers in order to give this information to the users, to get these applications actually developed. So we said, okay, why don't we just have the content store and we'll stream it down into memory directly and we will not have to ever worry about whether the application is installed on the machine or, in the case of AppV, is actually mounted on the machine. We will trick the machine into thinking that the assets for the machine are actually there, but the assets never truly leave, in terms of real estate, the content store. They're never transferred down. This reduces storage cost as well. So another problem we had, again, was the all-or-nothing strategy, where you had 50 apps, and you wanted to create a content store. Well, you had to lock that content store down. And when you actually had to change the content store, either update an application or add an application, you had to take everything offline that was connected to that shared cache. And this required a servicing window. This required an outage. So with the shared content store, because we don't care about the entire store itself, we only care about those applications that have been published to us, either globally or to the user, we'll pull them down so you can always update and add applications in the background. So what does a shared content store look like? Well, a shared content store is very simple. A shared content store is a web published directory or a network share. That's all it is. HTTP or SMB. You can take advantage of Server 2012 and SMB 3.0, but if you want to use your existing infrastructure running on SMB 2.0 with Server 2008 R2 or Server 2008 even, you certainly can do that. You can take advantage of web servers for HTTP, although in my practice, I much prefer SMB 2.0 and SMB 3.0. But the content store that was formerly what the management server used to do to stream down to the desktop, this content store is now the package root of all the AppV clients. And it's very easy to configure. All you have to do is configure a couple of registry settings. The package source root, and then the bit that you flip to turn on shared content store.
Now, can I do that through a script or an MSI installation?
You can do it through group policy even if you wanted to, yes. You can enable this automatically when you deploy the client. You can control this setting through group policy. Yes?
Is there a trade-off with rapid solution? Is that what's the question? Say it again. Okay.
Yes.
Is there a trade-off between the stream from content, the content sharing to memory?
Yes. And you have to plan for that. That involves capacity planning. And there's two approaches to that. Obviously, network bandwidth is going to be critical. But when we're talking about delivering applications from a data center to a variety of different devices, especially published devices or published applications, then the nice thing about a data center is it's easy to create those fat pipes between your content share and your AppV clients. And another thing to be very aware of is RDS environments or Citrix environments where you may have 50 apps running on that machine, 100 apps running on that machine. Memory is going to be key because as I will show you, when I launch this application, PowerPoint is launched, but as we will go see, PowerPoint is only partially there. What you're going to see in here is nothing but a set of what we call sparse files. Sparse files are designed in a way that allows you to actually create a file that's supposedly a specific size, like this oart.dll. According to the directory, it's 20 megs. But if I actually go and look at the properties of this file, the sparse file is only 1.5 megs. So the files, with the exception of maybe the primary executable, the files are never permanently residing on the disk in their fullest form.
They'd be similar to symbolic links, maybe?
Well, now, symbolic links are different. Symbolic links are when you actually do directory, where you actually trick the navigation to where you're thinking you're changing to a directory, but it's actually redirecting you to another location or another file. This actually is a different kind of file that's actually generated at the NTFS level, and unlike symbolic links, there's going to be partial data like the PE header that's going to be resident inside the file. There's just going to be not a bunch of white space. There's just going to be a reduced size on disk because for the data that's not being there. So where you may think that you're going to need 10 gigs for storage on an RDS or a Citrix server, you may only require half a gig when it's all said and done, because the only thing that's consuming disk space on the actual local physical machine are these sparse files.
Now, is this different in 4.6 and 5.0?
In 4.6, the entire store was always on the network share, and we used a symbolic link to actually redirect to what we called the FSD file, or what you often knew as the Q drive. The Q drive was never in any form on the actual machine, so we had a great deal of potential for latency. Now, the trade-off with the fact that we don't have as much latency is we also have to have memory, but still, we have to also have a very reliable network, because the last thing you want for your users to deal with is this. Because, again, we stream to memory with the shared content store. We don't stream to disk. So if you don't mind the extra storage consumption, then stream to disk or pre-cache is your model. But if you want to reduce your storage cost, then shared cache is the way to go. Okay, Robert. So, one other important thing to point out, shared content store now in ATV5 can be used in pretty much any ATV5 implementation. You could do it in standalone mode. I wouldn't advise it, but it's technically possible. You can use it with Config Manager now, with Config Manager integration. And of course, you can use it with the traditional ATV management server-based environment. More device flexibility, SANS, NASes, file share. You want redundancy, take advantage of DFSR. You can even use a web server and actually stream to memory using HTTP. NAS protocols, SIFS SMB, SMB3 is phenomenal with the shared content store with Server 2012, and again, HTTP as well.
And again, this is important for those of you guys that are infrastructure admins that are having to decide how to, you know, decide on space and network storage with some of these solutions. So ATV, again, becomes relevant in that space also.
Okay, short on time, but I have a question for you. How many of you are familiar with server ATV? Not ATV server, but server ATV. Question I get all the time is, I love doing this on the client side. I love virtualizing my applications. It'd be great if you had something like this for server-side applications. And yes, we do. We have server ATV. If you have System Center 2012, you have server ATV. What does server ATV do? Well, it often does the same thing for the client side with the server side. It allows for tiered rapid deployment for your data center applications. It allows you to take that server application that has 150 pages of installation instructions. You only have to go through it once, and then you have that application preserved in a consistent state, that nice ball of goo, and then you have those couple of PowerShell commands, and then bam, it's rolled out, and it aligns with what our server requirements are, because server ATV does not isolate. It just state separates. So as a result, COM Plus is supported, WMI is supported, services are supported. Obviously, they'd have to be. And of course, if your application requires specific local user groups, or individual local service accounts, all of that can actually be captured into the server ATV package. So real quick, the rapid ATV infrastructure deployment and scale out allows us to merge the two ATV products together to where you can actually take server ATV and virtualize your client ATV server roles, the ATV management server, the ATV publishing server. If you want to virtualize SSRS for your reporting server, you can virtualize those in server ATV and, again, provide rapid scale out.
So, again, guys, we work with a lot of customers. So I'm from the New York area. We work with a lot of customers that have these questions, and we're constantly working with them to see how we can help them solve these issues. So this is coming from just questions that come up with our customers and things that we've solutioned with for them. So our goal is to help you sort of see that and see where Appy can actually integrate with other solutions and not just what you use it for. So again, Our goal was to make sure you could understand integration points and consider best practice scenarios on where AppVee would fit best, and just be able to embrace that whole concept of where AppVee becomes part of other solutions as you're adminning your day-to-day work with applications. So with that, we want to end the session. We want to thank you all for coming out. And again, we're going to ask that you actually do the evaluation. There's a session this evening at 2. What time is it,
2:45.
So if you're looking for more information about Citrix, again, because this session is really about application virtualization and its integration points, if you're really looking for more on the Citrix piece, please attend Tony's session. And then here's a list of other sessions that you'll be able to attend too. Again, thanks for coming out for the session. I really appreciate it. And most importantly, make sure you do your surveys, because your feedback is very important to us. Enjoy the rest of Tech Ed.